Oh, yeah.
So, good evening, and thank you for being here.
Good evening, thank you. Mike Bishop here for the annual review of the Springfield Capital Improvement Program update. You have the document. I don't expect that all of you have gotten through all 200 pages.
Oh, yeah.
I have. Cover to cover.
Now you can test me.
Multiple times.
Oh, I will.
Perfect, good.
Do we look like the Senate of the House of Representatives?
So, yes, it's, 176 pages, I think, not counting the staff report.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of changes. A lot of the projects you'll see from year to year are in there. There are a few new projects, so we'll just get going. I do have a slide presentation. The photo on there, and Michael can talk about this too if he wants. He should be very proud. This is one of the two PED crossings that we got in on Main Street.
Yeah.
Sweet. In cooperation with ODOT. So up in
the 76 station, about
41st Street.
41st,
yep. Yeah. So moving in, so this, and this will be a quick review, and for, because I think most everybody has seen this before, but just a quick update of what the CIP is and what the project criteria are. You know, we have state, federal mandates. We have to maintain our existing assets. I think there's a statement in the staff report about doing some work on local streets. We have over 200 miles of local classified streets. We did a slurry seal on approximately 1.76 miles or 3.4 lane miles. So that's reported in lane miles, and that's roughly 1.5% of the local street system. So not a lot. And that was the first slurry seal that we've done since about 2008. We did a little bit with the sewer project. We try to dedicate our funding to maintaining our current assets because it is an investment for the public. We respond to project requests from citizens, not only just citizens, but other agencies. We have a few projects in the current capital budget. One is a PED crossing like you see there out of 58th near Thurston High School. That's a request in working with the school district. We also tap projects from our master plans. That's where a majority of our projects come. We do a lot of our long-range planning to find those projects, and then we program those through the five-year CIP. So again, identifying capital projects and needs. Hanson is our management asset system, which was currently updated. It's now all-encompassing, and they're still going through and working through that. So we identify, that's where we, for an example, we track our road quality, what the pavement index is, and how, what kind of shape the roads are in. Down there, so you just go through all that. That's our plan. You get down there, citizen requests. Citizen requests, we used to get quite a few that tapered off, largely because they come from, a lot of them are the same citizens, and I have a conversation with them every year, and a lot of them revolve around, like this year, I want my street paved, or I want this street. The one I received this year was getting South 28th paved. And we've had a conversation with some of the citizens out there in the past and some of the businesses about, a local improvement district, which would mean the adjacent property owners are paying for the bulk of the project.
It was nice to see South 70th get paved.
Yeah. Just quickly, I've heard the Hanson Asset Management System mentioned for the 4 years that I've been on the Planning Commission, and is that a graphical interface at all? Is it?
I haven't tried it. There is now a dashboard, web dashboard. I don't have it set up on my laptop. It used to be just kind of a series of metadata that you could get tables out of and you could search, but you kind of had to, there's a person out at ops that maintained that database. Now, moving into the new software, we're able to get in there and we can do some graphical things. We can look at the status, we can look up different streets, we can look up streets by segment. We can also go into the sanitary sewer, storm sewer, we can look up pipes by pipe type, age, that sort of thing, and look at it graphically. So it is, I guess, a more modern software package.
Well, I guess from my standpoint, being 4 years in, I would think at some point, you know, it's great that you come with this finished material and you say, that's how we get it. But at some point during a work session in the future, it'd be really nice to have somebody come over and do a 15-minute presentation on the Hansen Asset Management System and just kind of show us how you pull this data. I think that would be really a good thing for the Planning Commission to see.
I can work with Brenda and our tech services staff, because they're the ones who kind of have that knowledge, and they can come in and they can probably pull it up and just run you through a few scenarios just and how the data is stored.
I think that would be very helpful.
Very informative, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we can do that. I'm sure they would be happy to show off.
Do that before you leave, because you're the data.
You have to do it by, like, first of next week.
You can come back as a guest.
Oh, okay. That's what I know.
So, one curveball or one new thing I'm going to throw at you this year. So, in November, I made a proposal to Gino. So, currently, the CIP is updated annually. The process begins in October, usually finishes for me around April. And it coincides with the going through the budget adoption process. The proposal of Gino was to go to biennial updates for the CIP. Most of our agency partners have moved to biennial updates. It's a way of saving staff resources and dedicating them to other things, because it is staff resource intensive to update it. There's a lot of meetings, there's a lot of research and a lot of review. I spend, like I said, from October to April, a good portion of my day or week is spent dedicated to CIP update or tracking data down. And what you've probably noticed is there isn't a lot of change from year to year. And so with that proposal, we still meet the current ORS. And what that would mean is, so this year, the FY16 projects would be the basis for the FY16 budget, and the FY17 projects proposed. So we really zeroed in and focused in on those first 2 years to make sure we had those tight, and then those would be the basis for the FY17 budget. That doesn't mean that we don't make changes. We make changes all the time to what capital project priorities. Citizen comes in, council has a priority, and suddenly we're shifting gears, and we usually make those adjustments through the capital budget or through supplemental budget process, and those would just be considered automatic updates to the CIP at that time. And then when we did the update every 2 years or every other year, we would just make the changes in the CIP at that time. If the change was big enough and warranted it, and we have done it in the past, we can go to the council and have them review
and do an amendment to the CIP.
So Gino thought that was a good idea, so that proposal is going to council. They saw that in a communication packet in November. I didn't get any feedback or complaints or thoughts that was not a good idea. So I'm assuming when I get there next month that they'll be, okay, that sounds like a good idea. With that, my plan is to still commit to coming to the Planning Commission, coming to the council, you know, once a year in about this time in the spring, just to do a refresher, say, here's what's in the CIP, just an update. I'm not taking any formal action, but here's what 17 holds, here's what we had in 16, so, and this is the plan, and make sure all of those are still priorities. So with that, this process that you see up here would then go from October to March. April would still go every other year, would be the plan, and would still hold.
You see any issues or concerns there, Steve, from your standpoint?
No. As long as he doesn't come in and his nameplate isn't there, then he's okay.
Yeah. No, I didn't see that issue, but it's mostly a staffing thing. I mean, I used to have some support staff that helped me with it, and now it's been pretty much me managing all of the paper, all of the data, doing all of the number crunching, and it's just a way to, I mean, Eugene's been doing biennial updates for several years, and Lane County switched last year, and it is just a way, because what you notice is the projects don't really, because a lot of the projects are multi-year anyway. And we've done, once you've done your master planning, which all of our master plans are fairly up to date, that's really the basis for your projects. And so your CIP is pretty static, other than looking at the outer years, and that can be done every couple of years. So one of the things I looked at in November, Neil Adati took a citizen survey to the council. And it's a broad citizen survey. And one of the things I found interesting and what ties to the work here we do here, there's a lot of items on there that they quiz the public on and the citizens on. But what you'll see up there is one of the top three items is a healthy environment that ties a lot to some of our CIP projects with our wastewater and our stormwater water quality projects. And then also down there you see good roads, got 4.5 out of 5. It's not something we've been super successful at the last few years with our funding issues of maintaining our roadways. We've been doing a lot of work with the federal funds that we can get and match and accomplishing a few overlays there, but like you saw in the staff report, we haven't done a lot of slurry seals, so we've really been neglecting our local residential streets. And that's a big issue that we need to identify with. So like I said, you can see that one of the top three items, healthy environment, and same with safe neighborhoods. I mean, that gets to our downtown lighting project, ped safety, bike safety, that sort of thing.
It's interesting to me, could you go back to the previous slide? That government cooperation and quality leadership are above economic development.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that too.
I know that doesn't have a lot to do with CIP, but I think that speaks very strongly about this community and Team Springfield and the approach we take with our intergovernmental cooperation.
And I think actually, in a way, it does tie to our CIP because to point to that, we're working on a project, the Millrace Water Quality Park over here. We're working with Limelane currently.
Exactly.
You know, combining design services, building trailhead facilities.
And subs involved in that, too.
And subs involved in that with a major water line addition through there. So there is a cooperation on making sure that we're doing everything together. You know, Willamalade's able to tag on to our design contract, saving them money, and potentially our construction contract. Again, saving money by doing a bigger project. I'm doing it all at one time. Big benefit for the citizens of Springfield, big benefit for downtown as well.
Yep.
So I see, in the next couple of years when that gets built, it's going to look a lot different right across the railroad track.
And when we get over to the other side of the river as well, with the trail along
the trail and the stormwater parks. Yep. Yeah. And another few projects I'm working with the county. The county's planning to overlay Yolanda and 19th Street this next year. Well, a lot of people don't know, but City of Springfield actually has jurisdiction of a piece of Yolanda right between Briggs and Yolanda Elementary. When those two schools were annexed, we actually have jurisdiction of 600 feet of roadway right there. So I'm actually in 19th and Yolanda for 223rd are urban standards, so I'm working with the county that if we take jurisdiction of that, they'll overlay our portions of the street, those streets, both 19th and Yolanda, on their dime, with their money, their funding, and then we'll take jurisdiction when they're done. The other thing, I've talked to the school district, and they are in agreement that they're going to build sidewalks along the front edge of Yolanda.
Yes, we are.
With that project. So another part, we're cooperation and finding the project and a means that will help. With that, I've committed funding to doing a couple of the ramps. So. Anyway, so there is some government cooperation
in
getting projects done.
That's overlooked often.
I do. Sometimes I don't think we necessarily get it out there and advertise that the public knows what we're working on.
Absolutely.
So here I have, there's what the citizens thought the values, and here's when they quiz and how they thought we were doing on that. So I just pulled these two slides out of Neil's presentation, and if you want to go see it, it was November 11th, all the slides are in there, and you can go through all of the data, but I just pulled these two slides out because they kind of had the data that applied to the CIP. And so you can see up there, healthy environment, the citizens think we're doing a pretty good job. And I think if we advertise and they get out and they see some of the water quality projects that we're doing, that will improve even more. You can see the good roads is down there, one of the bottom ones, and that's understandable. I mean, we just haven't been having a robust road project or road CIP. And then government cooperation is down there too. But I think we are. Have several projects that we're working on jointly that I think if with the with the Stormwater Park and Willamette Lane, if we actually get that out there and let people know the education piece of it, that this was really a joint project and joint effort, I think a lot of that can be changed. And a lot of it's just telling our story.
This survey was done of who?
Springfield Citizens. I don't know. You'd have to ask Neil where he got the...
Most people don't know anything about those things.
Yep.
Yeah, so, and I get those numbers.
Yeah.
Be educated. Yeah.
And I told Neil after the what would be interesting is to see the questions they asked and how they asked the questions, you know, the verbiage, because you don't know.
Yeah. I mean, government cooperation.
Yeah. What's that
what
mean?
Really does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where knowing the question they asked and, yeah, and what they meant. But anyway, it's just how it ties to the CIP and how we're doing. So moving in. Springfield CIP is divided into 5 sections: stormwater, transportation, streets, wastewater, building and properties, and miscellaneous. Miscellaneous is really kind of a catch-all. We've got the asset management, which is the Hansen updates, some topographic mapping updates, and it's really projects that kind of hit all of the funds. And then we have some debt service, which actually we're paying off a few debt service notes this next year. We paid one off and we're paying another one off in July. So that's a positive for the wastewater and stormwater system. And then the projects are classified into several categories. You see us do a lot of repair and restoration, preservation on pipes, streets. We have some studies in there. We've completed a few. Some water quality projects, a flood control, obviously. And then looking out and looking to the future, the expansion projects, and then system upgrades, and then remodels, which really is ties into buildings and properties. So I have a couple slides here looking at the budget. So I have the FY15 budget up there, which is the farthest to the left slide. The light blue is the water quality projects. You can see in the first couple years, FY15 and FY16, we have some big water quality that's spending about $3 to $4 million right over here on the Milroy Stormwater Quality Park, mostly because we have to move about 250,000 cubic yards of soil to make a spot big enough to drain about 75 acres of industrial property. And then also there you'll see another big storm water quality project in there. It's the Fifth Street Water Quality Project, and that's actually another partnership that I'm trying to work with the school district as they rebuild Hamlin. It's a great opportunity for us because in the master plan we're supposed to take care of the water quality in the Q Street Channel, and there's a wetlands open channel there that actually, when I figured out how many acres it drains, about 461 acres of downtown Springfield. And we have the opportunity with the school being gone and the school district looking at putting and deciding a new school of doing a land swap with the school district, allowing them to drain their stormwater to that as part of their treatment. And also they get an outdoor classroom as part of that. The opportunity is part of the new middle school, which they want to build a STEAM, which is the sciences, technology, engineering, arts,
and mathematics.
I have to remember. And so it gives them a great opportunity of having an outdoor classroom for environmental sciences and things like that. Benefits the city with a large water quality, and we can get the property. Those opportunities don't come around very often. But as you can see, things taper off. And there, some of that is we just haven't identified a lot of the projects in the master plan. We have some studies that we're working on, which is the Channel 6, and we need to get the flood insurance rate maps updated before we can move on to those projects. We completed the first phase of the master plan, so we have a list of projects. The issue is if we don't do any of the projects in the channel, then we affect the firm, the flood insurance rate map update, and so we really need to do that first. So with that and the stable revenue source, we still have quite a bit of reserve that looking ahead. We have about a $2 to $3 million reserve, and so we'll be doing a lot of repair projects, but those two big water quality projects are kind of our main focus right now. And with transportation, streets and transportation, it looks like, you know, we have a $5 million CIP. It looks like we're doing a lot of work, and $3.6 million of that is the loan we took out to match the $6 million surface transportation money that we have for Franklin
Boulevard.
Boulevard. So that project's moving forward. Contracts have been signed. They've been out there surveying.
They're out there with their spray cans, doing everything. And you know, they should do that permanently, because they're doing it all the time.
Yeah.
For different projects, they come out.
Use some better paint.
On the locates. And they see several, you know, quite a bit of bike pedestrian facilities. And what that is money that we're getting for the Main Street TED facilities on Main, from ODOT. So it's not really our money. The revenue is coming into our budget from ODOT, but it's dedicated strictly to Main Street TED crossings.
And we did receive the categorical exclusion from NEPA for that project?
Yes. There is one piece that has to be completed, and I can't remember what that is, but right now they have issued the categorical exclusion.
Excellent.
So, yeah, that is moving forward. Expect construction to start probably late FY16, early 17.
I thought they were breaking ground in the...
They got bought right away by, a lot of right away, and that's usually the biggest holdup. And that's what you see, that $2.3 million, that's all money that's dedicated to the Franklin Boulevard project. System upgrades, there's a bit of money there for signals and things like that and lights, but for the most part, you see no repair and preservation, very, very little. The money that is in there is money that we're matching to pave Gateway Boulevard, Gateway Street. So with federal funding, we have received $1.5 million. Then moving on to wastewater. Wastewater is pretty steady. We have a big system expansion. That's Franklin McVeigh, a sewer extension. We're finishing that. That's what's in the FY15 budget. After that, we're pretty much steady on system upgrades, which is some pump station upgrades to existing pump stations, and then steady on, you know, roughly $1 million a year or so in repair preservation, which is right about where we should be. So, and the funding's steady, and we're still maintaining a reserve, capital reserve, about $3 million. So wastewater fund's pretty stable. Building and property. So FY15, you see we're just over $700,000 there, $600,000 dedicated to the building, like the building we're sitting in. And then we have a study. One of the studies we're working on is a seismic study right now of City Hall.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting. I received the preliminary report, so we've gone through it.
We went out for a public safety measure back in 1990 I worked on, and we talked about the earthquake thing. We decided to declare Springfield an earthquake-free zone.
Well, the earthquake will listen. And the seismic waves will go around us. That would be great. But anyway, it'd be interesting to see what comes out of our report. I don't know what we'll do with it, but plan is to be in front of council sometime late April. We're supposed to have a final report at the end of March, be in front of council late April, middle of May, kind of going through that report.
I don't think I'd want to be sitting in my car downstairs if there was an earthquake, you know, in the parking.
Well, sounds like you don't have to worry anymore.
Yeah. You need a nuclear-free zone, so that's why we need an earthquake.
I see.
Free zone.
So we're dedicating $270,000 through internal fees to maintaining and preserving our buildings. The need is really about $1 million, so we're really underfunding that. The problem with that is, as much like a business that owns their business, it's really an overhead cost, and so we have no real revenue source that you can go out and try and tie to building preservation. So trying to find a revenue source and fund that is really difficult.
And Booth Kelly takes a bit of that, too.
Well, and Booth Kelly kind of funds itself, so through the rents, and it's separate. It's included in here, but it is, we manage those funds separately. So Booth Kelly and the Carter Building, that really is for City Hall, the fire stations.
You try to maintain revenue neutrality on those.
Zero sum. Try and take in enough money, keep somewhat of a reserve, and maintain those buildings for the tenants.
Yeah.
So... The funding outlook, the sewer ratepayer revenues remain stable. We have healthy reserves. We're able to accomplish the work that we need to get done, and we're maintaining the systems as we should be for the assets, for the quality of the asset. SBC revenues are slowly improving, which is a good thing, and which is expected as with some of our some of the council items have sunsetted as far as the lowering of the SDCs and also development's picking up. the big thing is nothing new, street transportation funding. We have about $4.5 million unfunded, as reported to the council on June 7th in 2014 staff report.
Question for you. How will the county electing to raise gas tax or whatever it is? No, the registration fees.
They're doing a vehicle registration fee.
Vehicle registration fees. How will that impact the city potentially?
We have the potential to gain about $1 million influx of revenue. And the plan right now, in fact, I had a meeting with Gino and I met with Annette putting a project list together of what we would do. I put a 5-year plan. $1 million isn't a lot, but it will at least be a start. Gets into that $4.5 million if we dedicate the full $1 million to projects. But yeah, it gives us about $1 million of revenue into our budget.
Do you see that going for additional slurry to protect surfaces before they get in bad shape?
Correct. When I talked to Gina, one of the things, having gone through, one of the things I think we need to do is dedicate it to the streets that are still in really good shape, but are on that verge, that if we can get out there and do a thin lift overlay on them, we get 10 to 15 years more use out of them. We save them from the reconstruction. We have street segments that we've lost already are requiring more in-depth reclamation, more full-depth reclamation. So, you know, the key would be getting back to a robust slurry seal program on local streets. What were we doing in 2005, 2006? Mm-hmm. Get back to that, dedicate that funding, which was about $250,000 to $300,000, right off the top, taking the other $700,000 to $800,000 and putting that towards overlays and coming up with our priority list, but really looking at the streets that we can save before they get too bad.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And so that's what we're looking at. And so it will help. It's not going to solve our problem, but it's not going to hurt our problem either. So anything's a benefit. So yes, the vehicle registration fee is a good thing. And I sit on the Roads Advisory Committee as well as at large. And having reviewed all of the various revenue items that the county had brought forward, the vehicle registration fee is really, in my mind, one of the best options that they had if you're looking at revenue generation, nobody ever likes any sort of tax or fee or anything like that, but it's the most fair of all the options. It benefits the cities individually. It just doesn't all go to the county. So it benefits us. The other nice thing is the collection system's already set up. It costs the county $80,000 a year to pay for collection service, and the state collects it and then distributes it. So that's a big benefit. When the city has looked at the transportation utility fee, that's one of the big hurdles, is how do you collect it? Yeah. So, and that takes staff, or you have to hire somebody to do it, or pay an outside firm. Building, again, we talked about that, $1 million annual need, and we've budgeted just over, on an average, $250,000 annually through 2014. So we're falling behind on our building preservation as well. And that is it.
I'll ask. Last year, and it sounds the same this year, that you were somewhat optimistic with the economy improving and the budget picture improving slightly, that you're actually gaining a little bit on the backlog. Do you feel that overall that's still occurring, or is projects coming on that are causing you to backslide on the big picture?
If you take it system by system, so we're in really good shape in the wastewater and the stormwater system. Not stormwater, we're working on it. That's what you'll see most of the construction coming up in the next couple of years, is on the stormwater system, water quality projects, that sort of thing. Wastewater, because we sold bonds, we had to sell bonds to accomplish the work that the EPA required. One benefit to the recession was that we caught construction prices in really good timing. We got probably 4 times the work we thought we would get done with the amount of money we had. And so what that means is we're sitting in a position now where I don't know what the next, I know there's rehab that needs to be done on the wastewater system. I just don't know where it's at. And so we're working on what is the Capacity Management Operation and Maintenance Program, the CMOM program, which is the next wet weather flow program that MWMC has put forth. And so we're working on that, and once we get through all of that analysis and that plan, that will help us identify the next rehabs. But we've accomplished all of what was left, the 40,000 linear feet that was left in the 2001 WFM report. We had also accomplished another 30,000 feet that was identified in the master plan that was supposed to be done over the next 20 years, in the first 10 years of the master plan. So we've done all of our rehab work except for the upgrades to the pump stations. And that's also upgrading systems for future growth. We had a few pipe systems that were on the verge of being over capacity, so we've added capacity in those lines, and one of the last projects was just completed this year. So we're sitting in a really good shape. Same on the storm. The street system, not so much. We're falling behind. We don't have the revenue to keep up or even accomplish the projects identified.
One follow-up. Now, realizing that somewhere in the near future, decisions are going to be made on expanding the urban growth boundary, and I imagine that's going to present some new budgetary and some new engineering challenges, although is that going to be within the time frame of the five-year plan, or is it, you anticipate that may be beyond that?
I think it's going to be all beyond that, and we've been studying that as part of the 2030 comprehensive plan, and so we've identified those. The one thing about that is it's really dependent on growth.
Yeah.
I mean, Jasper Trunk, for example, has been in. It's been identified as a project. We didn't do it. Growth hasn't occurred. We're now seeing some interest that we built it, but I don't see us, say we move out to the College View, I don't see us going and extending the sewer from McVeigh right away clear out there. That's really going to be dependent on an industry or some sort of development coming in that really needs it and can help pay for it.
And those are underwritten by some SDCs.
Correct.
Right?
And those are that's going to be a very expensive sewer line. So I see it beyond the 5 year right now. I mean, we haven't even finished the update yet and formally adopted and gotten through that process. But we are thinking about that. When you will see that is when we get to updating our master plans, because then we'll have to update the 20-year master plan for those areas.
You talk about the over-under channel, and you've talked about that, I think, in relation to the New Hamlin project.
Yep.
It's not really clear to me by your description. I know you have corrugated pipe running underground for a portion of that. Part of it's open. Are you talking about replacing the existing corrugated with concrete pipe or some other form of pipe and then leaving what's open? That's a simple question to probably a very complex...
We were just talking about that today because we're in the middle of design. We're hoping to have something out to bid this year, finally, working with the neighbors, because it's really going to affect some residents. And so that's partly why we're taking our time. What the plan is, there's actually pipe underneath. Well, the channel meanders, but for the most part, what I would think about is there's a channel, and then underneath of that, there is a pipe system. And the channel is really an overflow system, so a few times, we haven't had an event this year, but like the rain, the snow events we've had, that channel will run full, which means the water's coming up out of the pipe, so the pipe system's full. And so what we're planning to do is replace all of the corrugated metal pipe because it's reached the extent of its life. And we're looking at using an HDPE product, so a plastic pipe. Mm-hmm. It's tougher. It's a little easier to get in the ground back there, and actually eliminating for the most part the deep swale and keeping a small swale, but pretty much putting all of the capacity underground, which the benefit to the residents is they gain usage of their backyards, where some of them just have this large channel in their backyard that they can't do anything with. They won't be able to build anything over the top of the pipe,
right,
but they can at least do something, get across the channel. I mean, there's bridges that people have built. There's all kinds of interesting things back there. So that's the plan, is to completely replace all of the corrugated metal pipe and fill in the channel, but leave a small depression, for that in a potential overflow situation to make sure we don't get flooding into houses or personal property.
That's great, thanks.
What diameter pipe?
248-inch parallel pipes. Currently, there's a equivalent of, it's a squash pipe, but it's equivalent to a 42-inch pipe.
It's a large pipe, right?
Yeah, it's a middle arch with a metal bottom, and it's just rotted out. And it's only a foot under the ground, so the plan is to get cover on the new pipes is to put 248-inch parallel, fill it in, and you'll see a small swale, but it'll be mowable. Like I said, they'll be able to actually use their backyard. So, and that was when we went to the residents, that's what they just, we presented the couple different options, and that's what they all kind of thought, let's get rid of the channel. And so one of those with the water resources folks, they never like to get rid of open channels, even though that one doesn't really act as a water quality feature. Like I said, it's more of a flood control.
Yeah.
It is then working with the school district to put a water quality feature at the end of the pipe there before it outfalls to the Q Street channel.
Yeah. Thanks.
One other thing, on your project list, and regarding to bike pad, which I realize we probably could bring this up again in another segment, there's a project that's the bike path in Glenwood that's along the riverbank. Mm-hmm. And I know that that is also incorporated in the Glenwood refinement plan. As part of the project in the refinement plan, it included a bridge crossing the river from Island Park into Glenwood. And I notice that's not mentioned here in the project list. Is that a project that's delayed, or is it still, is it a separate project, or is it
the bike pad bridge?
Yeah, a river crossing.
It's not on the horizon.
It's beyond the plan.
Yeah, that would be identified. The funding you see in there is really doing, the money we do have is we have a $250,000 federal grant, in essence, to go do start NEPA work, which we're in the process. They just hired a firm, a local firm, to start the process of what would we need to do to get through all of the planning hoops and permitting hoops of even designing and constructing a path. And that money is set aside to start the NEPA work on that path, so the federal planning work, just like we did on Franklin. And that would just start it. It's probably going to cost about $1 million to get through all of the federal planning, just to get the okay to build, because the path is located in the floodplain currently, or at least on drawings, and so it's going to take some planning. And so, and then now you have the new maps coming out, so that's really changed a lot of things for us. So anyway, so yeah, the bridge is not on the horizon. We've talked about it, but it's not in the CIP and it's not planned right now.
Nice thing to have someday, but I'm sure it's...
You know, there's some options, actually. If you look at there's some options besides putting that in the would-be cooperation with the state. There's ways, potentially, to hang a bike head bridge off of an existing bridge.
Well, there was
using a similar type of music or material that we put down on the Rosa Parks path with the surfacing. You can do the same thing, cantilever it out. But again, it would take, you know, it takes some cooperation and a lot in the state allowing us to do something like that.
If we get Glenwood to come together, that bike bridge will look a lot more positive.
Yeah, there was three different crossing options that were presented in the refinement plan, but one of them was a non-starter from the get-go, and the other one was the extensions and the bridges.
The other problem where that bridge is put, because I've looked at a few, that's a very, very long reach.
Yeah, it is.
So you're looking at putting a multi-span bridge in, so that it's really expensive.
Plus, you've got different elevations stretch from one side to the other. Yeah. So
it's the reach is really long.
One other thing, and then I'll rest. On the issue of talking about streets, traffic calming. Now, I know that I had a conversation with Clayton a while back, and his take was that the city of Springfield is opposed to traffic calming, like speed bumps and that. And he said the main reason was because of impact on emergency providers. And now that we have consolidation of emergency services metro-wide, and we have traffic calming all over the west side of the metropolitan area, whether that's still a stance of the city as far as not doing any traffic calming projects?
I'll let you have Michael answer. It's a very great question for Michael.
So traffic calming does affect the response time of emergency vehicles. There are different designs that can be incorporated that will accommodate both emergency vehicles and provide some traffic calming, such as speed cushions with emergency vehicle bypasses. There's other softer ones as well, such as lane narrowing and putting in chokers or other things. So we've installed those in various different locations. I think the key point on there is when you say speed bumps. You know, when you say speed bumps, you engender a parking lot with a, you know,
I guess
very extreme.
I guess they're called speed humps on the streets rather than speed bumps, but again.
I think, you know, traffic calming has a wide variety, a pantheon of different options to them. So the bump is a kind of a word that inflicts fear upon many. And so a bump as a traffic calm may be something more difficult. But a cushion, or a table, or other things.
Well, the primary concern is the impact it'll have, because.
And we have a recent development that came to the Planning Commission, which was Pinehurst. We incorporated a speed table on a pedestrian crossing as a traffic calming measure. It came into the neighborhood. A new street connection on 9th Street, we incorporated kind of a table going over the E-Web as you come up there. And we were going to do some cushions, but then where the pipe was in relation to where the road was wasn't going to work out. And so it's not so much that, it's the specific speed bumps thing. We are open to certain kinds of calming. It's just not the extreme type of calming that would be kind of the bumps.
Because I noticed that on the west side of the metropolitan area, there's calming devices all over. And I'm astounded at the different areas that they're located. As well, it's a totally different perspective in Springfield as to approaching that subject.
Some people don't see a lot of the calming as calming. They don't. They see it as just, you know, kind of amenity. So, you know,
regrading a street and resurfacing a street is the opposite of calming in many cases. And that's one of the concerns.
Sometimes, yes. Yes, yes.
Okay, that's all I have.
Striping can be a calming thing, too.
Thank you.
Any other questions from anyone?
Thanks.
All right, I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, thank you.
If you think of any, I'll be back.
Okay, our next item of business, we have a review of a discretionary use and site plan at 725 South 42nd Street for the Hillview Baptist Church. And we have senior planner Mark Metzger for that presentation. Good evening, Mark. Thank you for being here.
Well, this is going to be relatively short. And to be honest, the fact that I ended up creating a really long report, I wanted to give you an extra couple of weeks to look at it. But it's not a long report because it's a contentious or difficult project. It's just that for churches, I'm sure it's working. Maybe I'm pointing at the wrong direction.
I'm sure it's operator error. I'm sure. That's what we said.
Oh. Oh,
it's turned
on.
Sorry.
I've never been on
that helps. Helps to turn it on, right? Very good.
That's ridiculous. I've seen.
The property we're talking about is at the corner of 42nd and Holly, or it's also called Mount Vernon Road. It's a property that came before you folks just about a year ago.
Remember that?
And it's a former site of Mount Vernon School District, Mount Vernon School. And that school was closed some years ago. It was leased out to Head Start for a few years, and then more recently was closed as a surplus property. And the school district entered into negotiations with Hillview Baptist Church to purchase the site. Part of the condition of the sale was that the zoning be changed from PLO to low density residential. And so when this came as a rezoning issue before you, you saw school district people and you saw church people out there because there was a tied interest there. The church did purchase the property, and churches in an LDR zone are required to go through a discretionary use process. Discretionary use is basically a process that we use when there's a use that may have a potential negative impact in a neighborhood, whether it's noise or traffic or other kinds of things. And so on a case-by-case basis, these come to you as a planning commission, and you exercise your discretion and so on in making sure that these things are a good place, you know, for the neighborhood. Your staff report includes findings for both the discretionary use and a site plan review. Our code says that if you're building something and it requires a discretionary use permit, you need to turn in both the site plan and the discretionary use concurrently. So those are together. Unfortunately, there are a lot of overlaps in findings, and I have to make findings for both applications, but part of that 30 pages is just repetition, where what findings I make for site plan also have to carry over into discretionary use. Just the site itself, as I mentioned, it's the old Mount Vernon School. We'll see in a moment, but the church will sit on the east side of the property. The church, in terms of square footage, is just a little smaller than the old Mount Vernon School. The old Mount Vernon School is about 27,000 square feet. The church will be 24,000 plus at full build-out. The application came in, it is a phased development, but they wisely showed us the entire development, all three phases, and we've been able as staff to evaluate the impacts, the needed parking, needed stormwater treatment, and so on, for the whole project. And that gives us an advantage in that we see a holistic product and we can evaluate it as opposed to seeing little pieces at a time. The church will be situated such that there's a full 150 feet between the closest edge of the church structure with any nearby residential. As you can see, the old school site was separated from nearby houses by a street, park, railroad, and South 42nd is a minor arterial. The railroad is a busy, noisy facility. I live close to that railroad, just down the street, and I think it's 24 or 25 trains go through there every 24 hours. And so as far as the church creating some new loud use, it's not really the case. That the context of this is that a church at full build-out would be similar size to the school that was there before. There's going to be less traffic associated with this on a day-to-day basis. Churches, as you know, are a Sunday morning thing, sometimes Sunday night or Wednesday night, but it's a much less intensive use as far as traffic is concerned. The zoning across the street are a couple of single-family zone homes, but a lot of that is medium-density residential. There are a number of rentals. This little neighborhood here off of Glacier View Drive, these are all duplex units. It's a duplex subdivision. The park, of course, to the east, these are single-family homes. There's even some commercial a little bit down the street. So if you're familiar with the Relief Nursery, that's part of a commercial zoned area. This is what the site will look like as it's laid out. And this is Mount Vernon or Holly Street down here. The blue is phase one and phase two, and they're presenting phase one and phase two for initial construction. Phase two is kind of a narthex, kind of an entryway. This will be the first sanctuary and offices and a couple classrooms and so on. Long term, they want to have a larger facility that could be there. This dotted line here shows the cutoff between what would be built as part of phase one and what would be built as far as parking for phase two and, or excuse me, phase three, future phases. So they hired a good design team. Sometimes you work with nonprofits and you get kind of back of the envelope designs, and fortunately I think they've hired some good professionals and I've got some good advice. The main entrance to this facility will be off of South 42nd. That will reduce traffic coming into this little neighborhood here, and they'll enter from the south. There will be a driveway down here, but I suspect that a lot of the traffic will be coming in and out off of 42nd as opposed to coming around the corner and out down here. Your job, I guess, in terms of discretionary use, is to look at the question of, does this church conform with applicable zoning and other land use plans? And I can tell you, from a staff position, yes, the zoning's right. There are no other plans that it would conflict with and so on. Is the site suitable for the proposed use? And that becomes more the discretionary question. From a staff perspective, the fact that the church facility is not immediately adjacent to nearby residences. I worked on an expansion project just a couple months ago with the Faith Center Church up off of Hayden Bridge Road, and there's a church that, you know, one long border is right next to, you know, a residential subdivision. And so in this case, you don't have that kind of adjacency. It's relatively isolated. It's on a busy street. So there are things of that nature that make you think that that's a good place for the church. Are there...
And a park on one side as well.
Well, yeah.
To the east.
It is. If for some reason you find that there are issues, negative impacts of having a church at that location, the third question you have to ask yourself is, can any adverse effects of that church be mitigated through some limitations on hours of use or other kinds of things? That's just the nature of the three questions that you ask when you go through that discretionary use. Now, attachment number two gives you the full language for the criteria for approval for discretionary use, but for our purposes tonight, those really are how you would sum up the nature of the questions that you ask with discretionary use. Site plan review is more the technical evaluation where the civil engineer, Mike Lieber, and his traffic stuff works his magic, all that. But the discretionary use is really the element of this process that demands planning commission review, because
we'll be having a public hearing on this?
On March 3rd.
March 3rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, the adverse effects could be come up with public testimony.
Well, there's two other churches along 42nd Street. There's Kingdom Hall, and then there's another, is it First Baptist maybe or something? Or
well, there are two churches north of the railroad tracks. One is Hillview Church. Hillview moved into a tiny little church that's on
42nd. Oh, okay, that's right. Sounds familiar, right.
Yeah. Having lived in that neighborhood for a long time, that little church was a real eyesore. And this pastor came in from out of town and basically started this church at that little place.
Okay.
And it's really transformed that property, mm-hmm. which is a good thing. But across the street from it is an established church that has been there at least as long as I've lived down there.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. So there's like three.
I think that's
yeah.
a Baptist church.
So answer your question. Yes,
okay, I should have waited. I had to ask.
We sent out the 300-foot mailing, and we also, because of the hearing, published a notice in the Register Guard. But we've had not a call, not a letter, anything in response to notice that was given about the church use.
So the 300-foot notice would get to the people across the side street and across 42nd?
Yeah. It's 300 feet from the perimeter of that building. So there are people that...
from the outside of the tax lot.
Yeah, you've got people, this is a hill up
right.
here.
Yes.
You've got people up here on the hill that have won't be impacted at
sure.
all, they got notice.
Across the trail.
This is a sub power station.
Yep.
Again, you can see here residences where they are and so on.
Did it go to the homeowners or did it go to the current residents?
It goes to both. It goes to residents and owners.
That's nice.
At the rezoning meeting that we had, we did have one person come, and they live on 43rd Street, which is a gravel street, and they were trying to find some way to have the church pay for the...
Get their street paved.
Yeah.
And the Planning Commission didn't look favorably on that, and one, because it's not a condition of rezoning, but I think the person would like to have the street paved, it just wasn't proper.
Right.
Well, they were trying to assert that whatever project came into that would have an impact on their neighborhood, but it's kind of a stretch of, because well, it's an isolated little street.
Again, I think, you know, he lives there, it would be wonderful for him to have a paved street.
Oh, sure.
I don't think he had really
But I mean, I don't think the justification was there.
No. But all this to say, there is a driveway, a secondary driveway for the church on Mount Vernon, yeah, but the primary in and out will be off of South 42nd. The peak hour use on a Sunday morning about, you know, 9 o'clock, 9:30, people coming and then leaving at noon, that's in a low traffic period anyway in the neighborhood. So there shouldn't be any problem. Mike Liebler, just to compliment him, the original design was to have the driveway up here, and he worked with them to move that further south so they're out of the way of the, the railroad. Mm-hmm. That if for some reason traffic
was
backs up waiting to get in, they're not on the, the railroad. So those are the kinds of things that our staff contribute to design.
And they're not supposed
as I said,
anyway.
When you look at the conditions of approval, there's, I think, 14 of them,
14.
Which sounds like a lot, but frankly, most of that's boilerplate. There's a condition that you have to...
You have to maintain the wastewater or where...
Well, you have to build your drive aisles to support an 80,000-pound
fire truck. Yeah, 80,000-pound
fire truck. There are some dot your I's, cross your T things that we found on the plan that, you know, we want rectified, but as... site plans and developments go, this was a real clean project.
It's actually going to be really nice to get to have a development go into that piece of property. I think it's going to really add to that whole neighborhood.
I think so. And you know, I mentioned that they've hired some good people. The landscape architect for the project is well known in the area, and they've done a really good job. It'll be a
She worked for Ballheiser Hubbard for years, and now she's out on her own with Capital Engineering and Consulting.
Yeah, Tina is the...
Tina is great.
...is the engineer, civil engineer.
Yeah.
It's David...
Doherty?
Pardon?
Is it Doherty?
Doherty, yeah. Dave Doherty is the landscape architect.
I was wondering who that was. Good.
But he's one of the probably two or three most successful landscape architects in the area.
Yeah.
Shermer's lesson,
So it's nice when, you know, nonprofit really tries to do it right. Okay. It makes it much easier for us as staff. Yes?
Question mark. Will this public hearing take care of all phases?
No.
No.
Knowing that, you know, the phase three might be 5-6 years down the road.
Come up again then.
They'll have to come in at a minimum for site plan modification. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a site plan major modification.
Yeah.
But it's something where they can point to that and say, our planning commission, our staff, has seen this as a whole project and have commented on it as a whole project. It makes it easier for us in the future to look at this and say, yep, we can do this. And it reduces the amount of processing and angst, I guess, when we've seen it, they presented it fully, and we feel like we can move ahead. So
good.
Nice.
I have one question. Yep. This is really a background question. The question came up in looking through the material. And regarding to, I know there's always requirements in regard to landscaping and the maintenance of landscaping on any project like this. And I realize that there's conditions on how the landscaping is to be maintained. At the completion of a project, how long does the city have any control over the maintenance of the landscaping?
Well, we have a code section that talks about once planted, there has to be 65% coverage within, I think, 2 years, and then it has to maintain itself, I think, for a period of 5 years. Now, after that,
How is that enforced?
Well, I haven't gone out. Now, that said, I'm going to be driving by that place every day. But, you know, typically church or other kinds of commercial activities, the landscaping is advertising for them. And there's not a lot of problem getting them to keep it. There are some that don't pay attention and don't care. But when I talk about... Springfield Face Center as an example, it's an immaculately kept place, and they've been there for, you know, 20-some years. But again, I think they realize, like other churches, that that's how they represent their faith in the neighborhood. And so,
well, I'm sure in this case it wouldn't be a problem because you look at the indication from the former church or their existing church and the maintenance there. That,
but all this to say, there is code language that says that when you plant the stuff, it has to grow and fill in with a couple of years, and then you have to maintain it at least 5 years. Right. I think the number.
I know that's specified.
Yeah.
So will there be a sidewalk requirement around this? There's no sidewalk on the 42nd Street side now, is there?
Yes, there is.
Is there?
When they redid the street, it's fully developed.
Oh.
So they'll be putting some additional street trees in, and then behind the sidewalk, putting in trees that are not street trees, but it'll be a well-landscaped parking area and church grounds.
There's a sidewalk along the south border as well.
Good. So all this is, I didn't want just to all kind of be sprung upon you at the Planning Commission. You now have kind of a context and everything. Make your own decisions, but the staff recommendation at this point is to approve it with conditions. And again, if you look at the conditions, you'll think, gee, that's kind of picky, but that's what, planners aren't picky, it's those engineers who are picky.
So. Well, it's following the code, is what it amounts to.
Well, planners, you know, we squint at the code, so not really. Any other questions?
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, our last item of business for this evening. We have a progress update on the Bicycle Path Advisory Committee. Civil Engineer Michael Liebler.
Well, it was pretty easy. I just needed to introduce our current chair.
Mr. Well, I'm still a vice chair.
You're acting in charge chair.
Acting chair tonight, huh?
And you will go through the list of accomplishments.
And this is kind of like old home week because I know three of the five people here. I'm an ex-planning commission member myself from last century, probably, we could almost say. But anyway, I have taken on some duties with the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. And since you guys actually oversee our committee, we thought it might be nice to kind of inform you on what we have been doing in the last 2 years that we've been in existence. And so this is somewhat of a list of things. We're currently waiting for some new members to be appointed by the City Council, so we won't be meeting again till April. But someone who's been an integral part in things is Emma Newman, who's with the Springfield School District, and they're doing their safe routes to schools. So we have done a lot of intertying of volunteer positions to try to get younger people out on either walking or pedestrian. And it's kind of a double bonus because my children went to Page Elementary School, and I hear some horror stories about the traffic jams now at Page Elementary School during drop-off and pickup periods that were not even there in the early to mid-90s. So it also helps with the complete capital plan. But kind of an exciting thing that's happening is the revitalization of downtown. And I think the pedestrian and bicycle facilities through both those areas will lead to a continued. And Greg is with Willamette Park and Recreation District on their chair, and they've been very instrumental in getting some of the through paths to kind of put Springfield on the map with the whole biking community. One thing we're kind of short of that I'm hoping maybe we'll get some more of is some more heavy-duty or hardcore walkers. It seems like somehow, for some reason, the Bicycle Committee is kind of bent to everybody has a bike and likes to talk about bike things. But certainly, there are some walking transportation things that are very important to the community and the livability of it also. So kind of with that lead-in, I'd be glad to talk about any of these items on here or try to answer any questions you might have. I know everybody's kind of pressed for time, so I don't want to take too much more time. And I may defer to Emma on some of the answers because she knows much more about anything that says safe routes to schools underneath. Yeah, Jim.
Before we get started, Bill, I wanted to apologize for, I was the liaison from the Planning Commission to the BPAC, and I only made it to a couple of them. There was always a conflict.
Sure.
My regular job, it's real busy and certain. I didn't get to very many of the things, and I apologize for that.
Well, we were glad to see you when you came.
It was very interesting.
Yes.
I don't ride a bike anymore. I could walk, so once I start walking real good, I might get back involved in this.
Sure, no, exactly. And we'd love to have you anytime you can come. We only do meet 6 times a year.
I know.
So we have to kind of have, go ahead, Jim.
Just as kind of a background, I think it was, has it been 4 years now that the BPAC has been around? It was founded as a kind of on an interim basis for a year, and then the city council supported carrying that forward for some subsequent years. So, mm-hmm. And it's a great group, and I was involved for a year and a half or 2 years before I was the chair of the Planning Commission. So, it's a great group. And just you made a couple of statements that I think are very true. The page situation is a tough situation, but it's my understanding, and I have it by good from good sources, that the school district, with passage of their bond measure, is redesigning the entire parking and at Page Elementary School, and the city has been has worked very closely through that process, and I think there will be an outcome there that's going to be very positive, both for the city and for the school district, and the safety of the kids and getting to and from school. So
certainly, yeah,
that's on the horizon. As a matter of fact, it's going to be out to bid here in about a few weeks. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I saw, and this is my own private perspective, and I grew up in Denver, Colorado, is if you looked at the number of bike racks at the elementary schools when all of us, I don't know everybody's age, but when most of us were going to school, at least at my school, there were like 6 times the bike racks, and often those would be generally full. And now, you know, we see maybe 1 or 2 racks at times. Now, Emma's changing this, and I haven't seen it recently. But boy, there were not a lot of children that were able to ride their bikes for whatever reasons. So yeah. So I'm hoping that's kind of turning around, because it does nothing but help us health-wise and the like in the future. So yeah.
I'd imagine that the extent of bus service has a lot to do with that, whether you've got kids that are within proximity that they pick up the bus rather than exercise other options.
Well, exactly right. And I think it's a mile, maybe?
So for elementary school, the walk zone is at 1 mile. For middle and high school, it's 1.5 miles.
Yeah.
And that has moved out over the course of a number of years.
Sure.
You know, as a requirement. And so what you really see is a lot of parents with their kids in tow in a car pulling up to a school and delivering their kids and picking them up.
Especially for elementary.
Yeah.
There's a safety piece
sure.
to that also.
Right. One item that I think is great, it's called a walking school bus. And just a quick spin, and I won't take a lot of time, but it's where a certified adult actually meets children at a central location and then walks with them to school. And then when school is over, another adult or that same adult will then meet the children at a designated site and walk them back.
That's amazing. Where is that happening?
that's one of the things that we've launched at Page. Page is one of the schools that we have the most Safe Routes to School programming happening right now. We started with some planning process last year, developing a Safe Routes to School action plan, which is happening at multiple schools across the district each year as I have capacity to work with schools. Then pedestrian safety education, which is a two-day course, was implemented at Page as well, and that's happening at 8 out of the 12 elementary schools across the district as of this year. It was in one school last year for the first time, and then 8 schools this year, hoping to get all 12 elementary next year.
So is it?
And then Walking School was just launched this January at Page, and there's kind of one route with two stops on it operating along the path behind the school. On Fridays, it picks up from 5th and the path and walks up, into the school from there. Monday through Friday, it starts at the 11th and path location. Yeah. So depending on where students are, they can join up at whichever location is more convenient. And then we're going to be continuing conversations and saying, do we have capacity with volunteers to expand to have multiple Walking School Bus routes coming into the school? And if so, where would we locate those additional routes?
So schools that might be interested in that, would we just have to wait until that's kind of approached to the elementary school?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd actually get your number. So.
You do?
Yeah.
541-72.
Mount Vernon.
744.
I can just call you. Mount Vernon, I think, would be a great area, too. I see a lot of parents, including myself, that will walk our child to school. And I think, boy, if we could just get somebody that would want to do that in a group setting, that would be
And a great way to launch that is Walk and Bike Challenge Month is the whole month of May. So adults in the room, you can role model walking and biking during that month. But then also, if you're connected to some school, run that during the month of May.
I would like to bring it up to our PTA. So.
Great.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
Wonderful. And so, you know, this year will be kind of more of the same. It was interesting, the landscaping question that Chair Commissioner Voorhees had. I was thinking somewhat the opposite, that at least with city landscaping, where it's mandatory on some of the highways, there's really not a maintenance program to keep it cut back from the sidewalks and the bike path, and maybe there should be some kind of citizen adopting type thing where we could get our own citizens to go out and do some landscaping if the city is cramped for resources to be able to get that out, because that's actually kind of another safety issue that one has to worry about. So
wouldn't whacking on some other people's plants sort of...
Well, we'd have to be careful with that, Steve, wouldn't we? Yes, we don't want to do any private property whacking, do we?
They're not going to cut it back, but they're not going to let you do it either.
No, then we would need the city people to come out and do it appropriately,
for sure.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you for being part of the and taking on a leadership role with the BPAC. I think this is a great group, and the same thing was true when I was on that committee, served on the committee. The more bikers involved than walkers, but we had folks involved also that were, had some handicaps and disability, and so, you know, how they get from point A to point B is, you know, it's a good broad spectrum of folks that are involved, and I think that's important, because we need to look at all those perspectives when we talk about how we move from location to location.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
I have one quick thing. Thank you to Bill and the rest of the members, and just from staff's perspective, just to recognize how much of a great resource they are to us with our planning efforts. And it is unfortunate that we had to postpone meetings till April. We are looking to fill the vacant planner position that David Reeser took off to ODOT. But I just wanted to say that they have been a fabulous resource, not just for Safe Routes to School, but also for me giving support for the development letters for the bike stuff, incorporating a development and other planning purposes. So I just wanted to make sure that you heard that from staff.
Great. Thanks.
Everyone get on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Really, I didn't realize that.
I would just want to say, and that goes back to David Reeser, I've always appreciated his periodic visits with the Planning Commission and updating us on transportation planning issues, which he'd always done on a fairly regular basis. And I hope, however, that the personnel evolves, that you folks can continue to do that.
We are aggressively searching to replace as quick as possible to continue the good BPAC work, and as well as move forward the other planning work that David had completed, but also initiated. And moving forward. So, he was a loss. Definitely.
Yes. Oh, yes.
perhaps as a quick postscript, now that he's with the state, maybe we can do that cantilever bridge on the highway.
Where's your funding right there?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Sam,
I'd like to introduce Shannon.
Bridges up in Salem.
So I'd like to introduce Shannon Morris. She is, some of you know Karen LaFleur, and she retired. Yeah. This is her replacement, so Shannon.
Oh.
If you get those in the emails, you get the applications that have come
yes.
in. And stuff.
Yes.
That's all Shannon. So.
All right.
She's been with us since, was it December?
October.
Early
November.
It's like she's been here forever. So, planning commission, here's Shannon.
Welcome.
Ooh. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. I really appreciate your reports and also the additional report on the major activity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a new feature, and I think that's really interesting information to keep up with. All right, anything else, anyone? Questions? Okay. Our next meeting will be March 3. It'll be a regular session, and we'll have hearings on the capital improvement program and on the Hillsboro Baptist Church.
We'll be meeting at 6 o'clock that night.
6 o'clock.
Yeah, okay. There is a public hearing, but we have some work to do at a work session.
Oh, we're going
to
have, okay.
There's so a 10-minute item that's been added that's not on the calendar.
Okay, so we'll have those two hearings and then additional meeting for...
Yeah.
Brief item. Okay.
Yeah.
So that is it for tonight. Thank you much. We're adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you.
We might need to add all the agenda.